Well, could you tell me, first of all...
who my mother was.
Who your mother was.
So to speak. Well, she was the eldest daughter of Sir Courtenay Ilbert, who
clerk
was...
Clerk of the House of Commons.
Legal clerk of the House of Commons, and before that, legal member of the Viceroy's Council, and a Liberal. And her mother was a Bradley, and a very formidable figure, related to all the Bradleys.
The philosopher Bradley.
The philosopher and the Shakespeare Bradley, and Bradley's Latin grammar. Yes, they were brothers.
I see.
And Bradley's Latin grammar and the lot.
I see.
So that she...
She was top drawer academically.
She was top drawer academically, as you might say. And also with very strong Oxford connections, both through all the Ilberts and all through all the Bradleys. And my Ilbert grandfather was also Jowett's executor. And I think at one time, now I'm not absolutely sure of this, he was bursar of Balliol. Yes, I think so.
You couldn't have a better combination than that, could you, really?
And she was really very like her father, I think, in a great many ways, though with the Bradley vigour and slight eccentricity. And her interests, she did blaze a trail, so to speak, in her family by wanting to go to a university, which she did with the strong support of her father, though with some doubt on the part of her very socially ambitious mother. And she went to Somerville she was born in 75, and she went to Somerville at the age of, I think, 19, just after her 19th birthday. And at Somerville, she was taught by my father, and she got a first in history. And she then went to the London School of Economics for a year, I think, with some sort of scholarship or studentship, I think, but you might well find this in the obituary.
Yes.
And then she married my father in 99, and they set up in North Oxford.
Your father was a tutor of New
College? My father was tutor of New College.
Yes, in history.
In history.
Yes.
And led an exceedingly hard-working academic life, though, of course, with lots of little maids in the way that people did. Yes. And they had no money, but they nevertheless had three maids. Or certainly two to start with, and then I think three. And this, of course, was how people did live then. And she was attached to St. Hugh's, but I'm not quite sure what her title was, so to speak. And what she taught was economics. And she was one of the very early economics tutors in Oxford. And certainly, I think, the first woman economics tutor. And I wasn't born until a very long while after my parents were married, until 13. And so she didn't have a nursery on her hands, much as she would have liked to have one. And so she flung all her maternal instincts into things like infant welfare. And she was one of the people who started something called Babies Welcome. Probably Miss Butler stated all about this.
Yes.
Which was a very primitive sort of infant welfare service, which weighed. Technically, I think all it did was to weigh babies. But it meant that you did get a chance to get at the mothers, and so perhaps it'd be a good thing to wash it every now and then. And my mother had real horror stories of Italian organ grinders' wives coming with swaddled babies and a flea jumping out of every band of the swaddling clothes. And she also rent collected just across the road there, in St. Clement's.
Did she really? She was part of the Cottage Improvement Society.
Yes, she was. And she had a very long-standing connection with... I cannot remember the name. It's the little street where the British restaurant was.
Where the Queen's building is now.
Just where the Queen's building is now. I know the name perfectly well, but it's just on the tip of my tongue. And she did that street for years.
You mean she rent collected?
She rent collected.
Yes.
And this turned her into a teetotaler, though she made an exception for hock, which she didn't think counted. And she had the reputation among my father's rather proper friends of being pretty eccentric. And she never minded what she said or what she did or what she looked like. And she had great vitality and did what she thought. And this did have a great attraction for some of her, a good many of her pupils and people she came in contact with.
People do like eccentricity, don't they? I mean, even now, they like...
Well, they like bounce, I think, above all. I mean, what people enjoy among tutors and things is sheer vitality. And my mother had very, very high level of...
Did she? Yes.
Bigger.
What was the drive behind all this? I mean, if she was a tutor and a housewife, presumably entertaining on a rather lavish scale for her husband, and doing all this social work in Oxford, what really drove her on, do you think? I mean, was she a religious woman?
Not in the least, no. Well, this is my immediate answer, but I would have thought she might have had the temperament that in other circumstances might have made her into a religious woman, but on the whole, no, I wouldn't have thought so. I think she had great vigour and needed an outlet for it. And I think she wanted to get things right and came from a liberal and on her mother's side, I suppose, an evangelical background, which believed in improving. I mean, the Bradleys were strong evangelical.
Were they?
Yes. And I suppose in that generation, everybody who had any social consciousness at all thought that they could put things right.
Yes. Did she ever talk about reacting against her evangelical home background? I mean, deliberately shaking...
Oh, no, the home background was not, in that sense, evangelical. My Ilbert grandfather came, on the contrary, from a very old-fashioned Devonshire country parsonage, which took the squire and the parson absolutely for granted and no nonsense. And he had shaken that off. I mean, he'd become, under the influence of Oxford and life, I suppose, in general, free-thinking. And the Ilbert children were brought up with a mildly croyant mother and a free-thinking father. And some of them practiced and others didn't, I think.
Did your mother actually admire your father, your grandfather, your
I think they, grandfather? Yes, I think she did, and I think they were very close to each other. I think they had very much more in common than he had probably with his other daughters. And I think they enjoyed each other's company very much. They were both had very wide interests in natural objects as well as books, so to speak. They were both passionate country lovers and knew a lot about birds and animals. And I think, in fact, my mother got on with both her parents very much better than some of the younger ones did.
And really, moving towards the idea possibly of some sort of substitution of a social gospel for sort of deep religious commitment.
Not personally, I think, because personally I don't think there was, so to speak, deep. You can say see this in the historical context if you like, but I don't think it fits in absolutely with the...
I really think, Beatrice Webb's My Apprenticeship, you see a lot of sort of, as you say, sentiments that might have been religious in a previous generation being used for social investigation.
Mother was in the least like Beatrice Webb. I think was much more warm-hearted and much more instinctive. Also probably less clever, and but tremendously capable and frightfully well organised, and she did fit the most enormous amount of things into a day with no apparent fuss.
Did she? Yes. Yes, she sounds a rather marvellous person, actually. But did she have any contact, or do you remember her having any contact with Mrs. T.H. Green at all?
Oh, yes. She had a I remember, in fact, being taken to call on Mrs. T.H. Green when I was a small child. And wasn't there some family connection as well? Wasn't Mrs. T.H. Green a Vaughan or something of the sort?
That may be so. I'm afraid I ought to know, but I'm afraid I don't.
She had a great admiration for Mrs. T.H. Green, admired her enormously.
Did she? Do you know why? I mean,
no, I don't. Well, I was only about six when I was taken to see her. I was taken. I remember. I think my mother thought that I ought to meet the major figures. You know, who'd
Oxford. She was a grand dame, was she?
She was very much a grand. Oh yes, and very beautiful. She remained very, very beautiful until a very late age.
Yes. Yes, Miss Butler actually produced two photographs of her, and I'm afraid I was rather tactless enough to say she looked a little like Mr. Gladstone, along with a firm chin.
Yes.
And, you know, great emphasis was made afterwards on her beauty and attempts to find other photographs.
Well, she had obviously been very beautiful when she was younger, and I think she tripped a sort of shine, you know, as people do who have been beautiful when they were young.
Yes, yes. Do you remember anything about her apart from her beauty? I mean, it's a bit young, isn't it, to see her, really?
I don't remember anything about her, really, at all, except the occasion, I know, just having been taken to see her.
Because she, I mean, in a sense, it sort of seemed to me, anyway, and I'm not sure that I'm right, but there seemed to be a direct line of continuity between T.H. Green, with his very close belief in the university's social responsibility.
That, I think, is a much better line of attack, so to speak, than reacting, than diverting evangelical emotions into social channels. I'm sure that the T.H. Green aura was still very much about both my parents.
Was it? Yes. Did your mother talk about T.H. Green or read him or, I mean...
No, I think she thought reading him, I mean, I think she probably thought any philosophical work was really rather nonsense. And she took a very brisk line about this sort of thing. This is the sort of thing that male intellectuals amuse themselves with. But they really would be better employed by getting on with the job.
You're right, yes.
But my father was a Hegelian, you see, in youth, and went through the T.H. Green period, and it was, I suppose, very much all-pervasive Oxford atmosphere at that time.
Yes. Did your father sort of back up your mother in her social...
Yes, very much, because he was very much a believer in women's education and what would now be called women's lib, so to speak, and he was in favour. He was a suffragist. And oh, my mother also did involve herself, but that was, I think, a bit later, in suffragist as distinct from suffragette work.
Really? I didn't know that, actually. She was in the NUWSS, was she, the National Union of Women's Suffrage?
Yes, she was, I think. I know that there was a very nice paper that one was allowed to draw on when a small child, which had the purple and yellow band across the top.
Yes.
So I suppose she must have been.
Yes, I see, yes. That's interesting, because Violet Butler wasn't involved in suffrage at all. I think Violet is rather a practical person, and rather than agitate for general causes and abstract thought, she wanted to do things, practical things. And obviously your mother went a bit more wide than that. Was that something they had in common, do you think, this sense of the university's responsibility to the town, your mother and father? It's a thing that comes right out in Miss Butler's survey, the feeling that this town of all
well,
towns...
Well, I would have thought it was, perhaps, but I would have thought it was in a much wider context of the duty of the educated to the uneducated. I would have thought it would have applied equally well anywhere, whatever they'd been doing.
Yes, yes, it wasn't specifically confined to Oxford.
I shouldn't have thought so, but it's your guess is as good as mine in a way.
Yes. Did your father actually involve himself in town social activities at all?
No, I think not. I think he was really too busy. I think he may have involved himself a bit in liberal politics. But I don't know, I'm afraid. He must have, mustn't he? Because otherwise he wouldn't have been thought of in 1916.
Well, precisely. I really must read the biography of your father, mustn't I?
It isn't pretty good, I'm afraid, but still it may have
some
effect.
Isn't it? Yes, I've got it, actually, but I've never read it, and it would obviously rather help.
Yes.
I think I must do that. But They were both liberals, presumably.
Yes.
Yes.
I think my mother was very much under my father's influence intellectually, and she had a great admiration for his mind. And I think he was a good deal older than she. He was 10 years older than she was, and had been, of course, her tutor, and I think probably shaped her mind a great deal, though her character absolutely not at all.
How do you think he shaped her mind? Simply training her to think in sort of logical ways, or I mean that sort of way? Or
well, I should have thought she took a good deal of... I mean, I think if she'd married a religious man, she would have been religious. I mean, this sort of thing.
There's a trio, isn't there, operating, I mean, Oxford, Alexei, Mrs. Wells, Mrs. Pritchard, and your mother.
Yes.
And I get these three brought up to me every time I talk to
you. Do you? Yes.
I wondered whether you could tell me a bit more about their relationship. Do you remember them?
My mother, I don't remember Mrs. Pritchard at all, but my mother was immensely fond of Mrs. Wells. And I faintly remember Mrs. Wells, but she was very delicate. And died youngish, of course. And I remember her as an invalid of whom my mother was fond. At least an invalid, perhaps putting it too strongly.
Mm.
And the Wellsies had a little boy about the same age as me, and we were both adored and unexpected only children.
I just haven't got a picture of the other two of the trio, you see. I mean, I'm getting a picture of your mother, but
well,
ideally...
Mrs. Wells, I would have thought, was a much less colourful and also less erratic character than my mother. I would have thought she was more conventional, I would have thought. This is simply a child's recollection.
Yes. Could I mean, it's the only one I could talk to who's in the same position to Mrs. Wells as you are to your mother, do you think? I mean, do you know...
I don't know what happened to the son. I don't even know if he lived. Brian, he was called. There ought to be somebody in Wadham who would...
Who was Mr. Wells, actually?
He was warden of Wadham.
Oh, I see. Goodness me, you see, it just shows how ignorant I am. I hadn't realised at all. Perhaps I ought to ask about that, because it would be rather nice to get another... of the three fitted in. Who was Mrs. Pritchard then?
Well, wasn't she the wife of Professor Pritchard?
Probably, yes, it sounds like it, doesn't it?
Who was a moral philosopher. A very boring moral philosopher.
I see. Mrs. Pritchard...
I do faintly remember. Mrs. Pritchard was very much more like a... as far as I remember, but don't believe me, because this is very dim, a sort of traditional North Oxford wife.
Yes. Didn't she have ever so many children? Or quite a lot?
I don't remember.
Because I believe she was the expert on babies, actually, from a practical point of
view. From the practical point of view, yes.
I think. But I'm not certain about that. Anyway, I mean, there's an older trio. There are two trios. There's Mrs. Toynbee, Mrs. T.H. Green, and somebody else, I can't remember who operated as a trio. Then in the next generation, there's this trio.
How very amusing, is that?
Yes, and they seem to have had tremendous influence on sort of charity organisation, society, sort of local town, university charity connections, and of course North Oxford. I mean, one of the things about the university at that time seems to have been that it was so much more important to the whole life of the town.
Yes,
and the
well, of course, the town was very small.
Yes, and
there
they
was
all
no
knew each other. Mm. Yes, precisely, yes.
Oh, they all did know each other.
Which is something I want to somehow recreate when I write about this survey, because the survey comes right out of this whole world. I mean, it's sort of high-minded, intellectual duty of a rather admirable sort. I mean, being sarcastic, but I mean, I'd rather admire it, actually. And your mother's obviously central there. You say she was eccentric. I mean, in what way?
I don't really... Frank Lepper could probably give you a much better light on this than I could. She didn't mind in the least what she said. Or indeed did. And I think she shocked people quite a bit by, but also amused them. I think this comes really It's awfully difficult to put one's finger on it, especially with a parent. The Fishers were a very disciplined, though at the same time rather wild, family, in which the women very much effaced themselves, and my mother wasn't a bit like that. The women were very powerful in the Fisher family, but overtly effacing, self-effacing. And they deplored my mother's public behaviour and thought poor Herbert, and that she didn't look after him properly. And they very much disapproved of professional women anyhow. Whereas the Bradley strain in the Ilberts was, I think, probably very clear-headed and also rather socially calculating. There's a very good picture, though entirely excluding my mother, of the Bradley background in a novel by her next sister called Lost Content. And it's published it's called Three Daughters. And it's published under the name of Jane Dashwood. My mother, it's about the three middle daughters. Was the eldest of five daughters. And this is about the three middle ones. And it's an extraordinarily accurate picture of their background.
I must look at that now.
And I think it might amuse you.
Yes. That's very helpful, actually.
But the three middle ones lived a quite different sort of life of going to balls and so on, from which my mother had separated herself.
Had she? Mm. Just because she was bored with sort of social relationships?
She didn't have it. She didn't want it, really. I mean, she wanted to go to Oxford and learn history.
That's, again, rather like Miss Butler, I suspect, actually. You say, I mean, presumably the Fisher wives and the women then, were they anti-suffrage, do you remember?
I should have thought strongly, but I don't know. I think they were the sort of women who thought that suffrage was quite unnecessary. They could manage everything quite well without
probably
a vote.
Probably did. Precisely. Yes.
There was a strong French strain in the family, and I think they were very like a certain type of French. Upper middle class woman who manages everything in the back, from the background.
Yes. Did your mother get on well with her Bradley sisters then?
Her Ilbert sisters? Not, I think, terribly well. I think there was a very close relationship between her and the youngest of them, who was much younger than her and much more like her than the others. They were all very much devoted to the middle sister, who was the sort of pivot in the way that almost all families, big families, have one figure round whom the others revolve. She was the central figure in that family. They all admired her.
She's in the novel, presumably.
She's in the novel, yes.
Why did they admire her, actually? Do you remember? I mean,
gaiety and intelligence and beauty. Mm. I mean, all the usual things.
Mm. Mm. Yes, that really gives me a marvellous picture. I mean, so her eccentricity would show itself in her frankness, her sort of...
Not bothering about what other people thought.
Yes.
I mean, tremendously. Yes. Whereas this was very unlike any of her relations or in-laws, I think.
And presumably unlike most Oxford women at the
time. Probably fairly unlike a good many Oxford women.
Mm. What about dress, then? What did she wear?
She didn't bother about it very much. Mm. She was capable of looking rather splendid. I'm sure my father would have liked her to be much more elegant. But she wasn't. I mean, she didn't really bother.
She was sort of practical, businesslike.
She would have put on... she wouldn't in the least have minded being found in gardening shoes. I mean, she complied with the basic conventions of putting on the right clothes for the right occasions, but she really liked being in gardening clothes and not having to bother.
Sounds a marvellous person, actually. I'm warming to her every minute.
Well, not everybody liked her. She was a very strong character, and she didn't get on with everybody.
Did she have sort of views, really? Was she opinionated, do you think? I mean, did she obtrude her views a lot in discussion?
Well, no, I wouldn't have thought that. I think she was very frank, but I wouldn't have said that she was opinionated in the sense that somebody like Lady Mary Murray was opinionated.
Hmm.
I mean, you couldn't be in a room with Lady Mary Murray without knowing what her views were.
Yes. Yes.
And she made them all too clear on a great many very embarrassing occasions.
She was teetotal, of course, wasn't she? That was one of her views, Lady Mary Murray's.
Well, I think the thing about Lady Mary Murray was that she regarded as moral delinquency any divergence from her views.
Very tiresome.
And I don't think my mother would have bothered about that.
Do you remember, of course, one of the things that makes it difficult for you, I suppose, is that I'm talking about the years sort
before
of 1905 to 7, whereas you knew her much later, obviously.
Mm.
But have you got any sort of impression of her taste in friends? I mean, what sort of people she liked to mix with and so on? What sort of people in Oxford she cared about?
Her main friends in Oxford, her main friend was a violinist called Mary Venables. Her one artistic outlet, so to speak, was music. She didn't care really tuppence about painting or architecture or any of the visual arts, I don't think, but she did mind a great deal about music, and she played the violin with great vigour, though not very well, and she played in the Oxford Orchestra and had a tremendous admiration for Hugh Allen, as all the Oxford ladies did.
Hugh Allen being, I'm sorry?
He was Professor of Music, Professor of Music, and he... Well, he was... I think you might look up Cyril Bailey's biography of him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's part of all this, really, and part of what you're talking about, which is the university and the town, because he was the first person who brought city music and university music together.
Oh, well, that's the same sort of area. Cyril Bailey's autobiography?
No, biography of Hugh Allen.
Oh, I see, yes, biography of... Yes, well, that would certainly be a very...
I think all the Oxford ladies who were musical at all had a tremendous schwärmerei for Hugh Allen, and I'm sure my mother did. And her main Oxford female friend, with whom she had an extremely close friendship, was Miss Venables, who was a maiden lady living in Norham Gardens, and who was the first violin in Hugh Allen's orchestra. And she and my mother shared a house, I'm not sure if they shared the house, but they certainly shared the garden, of a house Miss Venables had built on Cumnor called Larkbier, where my mother used to go and garden.
This was before she married your father?
No, there was no time in Oxford before she married my father. I mean, she had a garden in Norham Road, which is where she eventually lived, but this was not enough for her energies, and she also had a bit of a garden in, part of a garden in
Larkbier.
Of course, they had gardeners.
Yes, so
you
direct.
So I don't suppose she actually dug, but she may have, for all I know.
Hmm. Incredible. This sort of zest for gardening, was it a sort of desire to tidy up nature, so to speak, do you think? And was she a tidy person, a sort of well-organized person? In a way, you're suggesting not, I think, aren't you? I mean, she did things, but not in a sort of business-like way.
She was not absolutely untidy. I mean, she wasn't, I wouldn't have said she was untidy. And I think in a basic sense she was very well organised and very regular. And in fact I don't think she would have got through as nearly as much as she did if she hadn't been regular in her conduct of life. But she was slapdash.
Not obsessive about tidiness.
Not a bit.
No.
And did too much to be meticulous about any of it, I think. So she wasn't at all a meticulous gardener, and in fact I think she always took on more than she could manage.
Yes, I'm not surprised. And of course the great thing was servants, wasn't it? It did enable you to do so much, didn't you, if you were an educated woman at that time.
Certainly.
Yes. Of course the
She had very devoted servants. She stayed with her a very long while, yes.
Did she? Yes. Of course a lot of people did. I mean, that's again the thing one tends to forget. They become part of the family, in fact.
Yes.
Yes. Did she give up giving tutorials when she had you, or did she carry on?
There wasn't a very long interval between that and my father going to Sheffield, and I think she carried on, because I think there were pupils who remember Pram in the garden. Miss Butler probably would. But my father went to Sheffield the year after I was born, I think. And, yes, the year after. And so there wasn't really a very large, long interval. And then there was the war, and she was... Everybody's energies went into that.
What did she actually do in the war? Presumably at Sheffield?
Well, I think she wasn't... The main thing about it was that she was... From halfway through, she really wasn't at all well. She had... what was supposed to be a very bad heart at that moment. I have a feeling in retrospect this was a mistaken diagnosis, because she found it terribly difficult to die. I mean, in her old age she had a heart that absolutely wouldn't stop. But it meant that I think she got, I suspect she may have had something like rheumatic fever. She was arthritic very in later life, and this, she said, was largely the result of the combination of the Sheffield climate and a good deal of standing about, being some female equivalent of a special constable. I can't remember what they had, but they had some sort of woman service that she... I just don't know. But anyhow, this knocked Sheffield, the combination of the war and this did really very much knock her out for several years. And in my early childhood, she was a semi-invalid of a sort. I mean, we had to be careful about going upstairs and that sort of thing. And she always, after that, rested in the afternoon. And this was a great lifesaver. I'm sure it's a very sensible plan, like we all ought to. But she was told in about 1918 that she wasn't going to live. And she made a lot of rather rapid arrangements for my father and me, like quickly buying a house near London and that sort of thing. And in fact, I think probably what did her in was the Sheffield climate, which was a very bad one, and the strain of the war. But as soon as she moved south again, I think in retrospect, she started to get better. And no one who knew her in the later period would ever have dreamt that she had gone through this period.
Interesting. It's rather interesting. You quite often discover people actually, it's quite wrong to assume you do necessarily get iller as you get older. Some people do actually get better in health when they get older,
yes,
don't they? Did she pine for Oxford? Do you remember when she was in Sheffield and out of
she
Oxford?
Pined, she didn't, I think, pine for Oxford so much, but she did rather pine for the South. She didn't really like living so far away from all her friends and... She made friends in the North a bit, but of course, we weren't there very...
No, because your father came into politics, didn't he, around about 1918,
17? Oh, 16,
I mean, 16, you're 17. Right, I'm wrong, sure.
Well, I can't remember, but I mean, I don't remember that, but I think it was 16, 17. But we kept on the house in Sheffield because I haven't got this straight in my mind, but there was some complication or series of complications. I think my father didn't, the post was kept in suspense for a bit, or something of the sort, and the next Vice-Chancellor, who was Sir Henry Haddo, didn't want a house of his own initially and lodged with us there, I think not for very long. And I also didn't thrive in London as a child, and my mother didn't want me to be there. So the simplest plan I imagine seemed to be to keep the Sheffield house, which is a very nice one, going. It was a charming little manor house now.
Could you give me a sort of brief resume of what your mother's later career was? She was a housewife and sort of managing for your father, presumably, a lot. Was she?
She wrote a certain number of little books. I think the period between the two Oxfords was largely knocked out by illness and my father's career and so on, except that she got going on her unmarried mothers, and I can't remember, National Council for the Protection of the Unmarried Mother or something, which she started and ran until she had her first stroke in 49. When she got
she really, that's really a very important piece of work, isn't it?
And she did that, and she did liberal politics. And she, I think that was about it. And then she, when, I can't remember when she started writing little books, but she was certainly going on doing it in the earlier years of Oxford. And she then did an enormous, and running that tremendous house at New College was a very considerable job.
Yeah.
And we did an immense amount of entertaining. In retrospect, I cannot think how they survived it. But I can't believe anybody now has people flowing through the house in the way that they did. And she did that, and she went on with the unmarried mothers, and she went on with liberal politics to a large extent.
These little books you mentioned, I haven't looked them up, but I must obviously look at them.
She wrote a basic economic textbook called Getting and Spending, and she wrote... She did a certain amount of broadcasting in the early days because one of her pupils was the first talks director in the BBC and got her to do some sort of talks to housewives on this and that. There's a classic story about my mother. The Jubilee or some royal function. And the king was due to speak. And everything was, all channels were, if there were, I think there were more than one, everyone tuned in at, let us say, a minute to 12. I mean, I can't remember what time it was, but that, let us say that. To hear my mother's voice saying, and above all, keep your hen's feet dry. Well, that is absolutely characteristic.
Yes.
And she didn't mind at all.
Totally down to earth.
Other people might have. But she gave a series of little talks on things like keeping hens or goats. She'd done all these things. And she would have been a very good, in another period, a country parson's wife.
Yes.
And she liked doing all those sort of domestic things, which she did again in a rather slapdash but quite successful way. And she went on doing them. I mean, she kept hens in New College. She was the last wife to keep hens in the
house. Absolutely marvellous. Because the principal of Jesus' wife, who recently retired, they kept hens, didn't they, in the
did
back
there,
I think. But still, it's rather a splendid thing to do. I see. So, when you remember her, when she in her second phase in Oxford, was she active in sort of town, charity, town, good works?
No,
then?
I think not. I think not.
Probably too busy, I should think. Anyway.
And I think she also felt that her old friends had died or gone away, and the whole thing was different.
And the city council, of course, was by then much more active, I imagine, and less needed prodding.
I imagine. And I think, and Cowley had come into existence, the whole thing was different. It was a different sort of world. I think she found it very painful coming back to Oxford.
Did she really?
I don't think she terribly enjoyed running a large social house, in fact, though she did it as a matter of course. And I think that she felt tremendously that there had been a great cleavage between the first period and the second. And
did she really?
There weren't very many bridges left.
Cleavage in the sense of people?
I think in the sense of people, that old friends weren't here anymore, were dead, or that she, even more painful, that she was sort of, she'd become different from them, and they'd gone on. Oxford, I imagine, was an even more enclosed society then than it is now in many ways, and of course if you're out of it, as we all know who've been away and come back, you're thought of really as being dead. Nobody believes anything happens except in Oxford.
That's true, that's true, yes.
And I suspect it was more so in 1925.
Yes. Of course, the central to this whole thing is something which I suppose you can't tell me anything about, that is the tutorial relationship between her and her pupils. But do you remember her pupils coming back to see her, or her being very attached to pupils?
Well, there were some pupils who were tremendously attached to her. And who, I don't know if they kept links up, but they certainly picked them up if they came back to Oxford. Sister of Sir Frederick Ogilvie's is the sort of obvious person who comes to mind, who, Mrs. Carlyle, who would automatically write to my mother if their children were coming up to Oxford, and that sort of thing.
Of course, A.J. Carlyle is somebody who you may remember, do you? I don't know.
I faintly remember a picture of him, I mean a sort of visual image, but I don't remember anything else.
Yes, presumably your mother would know him quite well as well in her first phase in Oxford, because he was a major sort of social work type figure, but I don't know much about him. He's another cloudy figure I want to.
I would have said that my parents' closest friends in Oxford were always the Gilbert Murrays.
Were they?
My father and Gilbert Murray were contemporaries and each other's closest friend, I would have said. And my mother and Lady Mary Murray were, I think, great friends in a sort of way, though they didn't altogether see eye to eye.
Would you imagine her as being a good tutor? I mean, sympathetic?
Yes, I would, because she was extraordinarily clear. She was, I should think, what I would have thought would be that she would be particularly good with not very clever pupils, because she was very patient with the young and tremendously lucid. I suspect almost too lucid, in the sense of clarifying unclear issues. But I would have thought awfully good.
She sounds a bit like Lady Stocks.
Yes, I think she was a bit like Lady Stocks. She was cosier than Lady Stocks, I think.
Yes, less sort of military in her.
Yes.
But there you have, again, the very clipped, clear, lucid way of saying things, and a complete indifference to other people's opinion about what one should
do. I think she was rather like, I think that is the closest, I hadn't thought of the analogy, but I don't think it's altogether bad.
I like women, I reckon. could you, I mean, has she, I suppose it's a rather vague question, but can you remember her having any particular attitudes to social class or to class relationships? I mean, you say she got on well with her servants and so on. Do you remember anything significant about that?
She didn't terribly like the company of the aristocracy. My father did, and my father adored country house life and thought it was the most agreeable pattern of life that existed. And my mother didn't like it at all.
Again, because you can't say what you think, presumably?
is it? I mean, that sort of society.
Well, I think she thought it was a rather waste of time. She didn't wasn't particularly interested in conversation. Liked having a lot of activities. And didn't terribly like the sort of Henry James world that was still in existence, just. Sort that my father liked very much indeed.
Mm. Sort of elegant, rather.
Elegant intelligence.
Yes. Mm.
Didn't
yes.
like elegance. I rather actively disliked elegance, and really probably only liked intelligence if harnessed to something.
Mm. Did she remain a liberal throughout her life?
Yes, she did.
Mm.
She had a great tendency to schwärmerei, I think.
Mm.
And LG was one of the schwärms.
Was it? Yes.
There were a number of them.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a great many people for whom she had unlimited admiration. Mostly mm. people with great, not always, great vitality, like Hugh Allen.
Mm. Of course, Lloyd George has great vitality too. Is
yes.
that what she attracted?
I think probably.
Yes, yes. I mean, again...
And she had it for people of both sexes.
Mm.
And she had a tremendous capacity for having tremendous... I expect that the time I knew her, she got over most of it, but I'm sure that when she was younger, she was always having sort of engouement for people.
Yes, yes. That's
and inspiring them also.
What about Asquith versus Lloyd George? Did she take side?
Oh, she
that?
Would have been passionately Lloyd George, yes.
Would she?
But she wouldn't have liked Asquith, you see, very much. I mean, not
too
her sort of man.
Aristocratic in his sort
not
of image.
Not that he was, of course, but...
Yes.
Well, yeah. Too keen on... Too self-indulgent... Well, not that OG wasn't self-indulgent in many ways, but...
Mm.
No, she liked the... She very much preferred the more boisterous sort of... expression of vitality.
Yes, sort of spontaneity.
My father, of course, was, one would have thought, emotionally Asquithian, though intellectually Lloyd Georgian.
Was he? Mm. I'm afraid I don't know as much as I should about your father.
Well,
yes.
Until the last years of his life, when he was on the feeling that anything ought to be done to avert another European war, and that this would be the worst of calamities, and that anything
mm.
was better,
mm.
He was... On the whole, on the radical side of liberal politics,
was he?
I would have thought.
Mm. 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 With young people, then, your mother got on well. I mean, they liked her energy, her vitality. Her...
Well, frankly, I would probably tell you more about this than I can, because a child's relationship is different. I think that probably some people found it absolutely infuriating.
Mm. Mm.
Others would have found her absurd, and
mm.
others would have enjoyed her.
Yes.
There's
yeah.
also a very nice story, which Isaiah Berlin has. Which I think is more Ben Trovato than Vero, that after Oxford dinner party he said to my mother that he'd so much enjoyed talking to her charming daughter, and my mother said, yes, we've trained her to talk to anyone.
That's marvellous.
Now, this is a story that I think is more likely to be true of somebody like Mary Murray. I mean,
mm.
it would be absolutely convincing in the mouth of Mary Murray.
Yes.
It's shadeless convincing in the mouth of
yes.
my mother, but it isn't absolutely implausible.
It's a sort of direct truthfulness, isn't it, which is so truthful that you don't realise what offence you could be creating
yes, exactly.
to sensitive
yes.
people. Yes. Did you don't remember Miss Butler very much, I suppose. I suppose they drifted apart by the time...
No, I don't. I don't remember her. I mean, I remember yes. since I came back to Oxford myself, but I don't
mm.
remember her at all.
Mm. She wasn't in and out of the house
no.
very much or anything
no.
like that.
I think
yes.
very few... I think it was a very difficult situation, but I think that my mother had moved into a different groove by the time
mm.
she came back from Oxford.
Mm.
Mm. People weren't in and out all that much.
Well,
and she
marvelous.
Was also having to conserve her energies, I think.
Yes, yes. That really is marvellous. Give me absolutely what I wanted. Is there anything else you think that I ought to have asked you? I mean, one never knows what are the right questions to ask, really. I mean, to get a proper impression of your mother in this sort of context, is there anything I should have asked you about which I haven't? that you think's relevant to understanding her or her relations with young people or with pupils or anything like that?
No, I can't think of anything, really. I think it would be worth your looking up the Gilbert Murray obituary, because he had known her all her life, which she died in February 56.
Did she? I see, I was making a... Gilbert Murray wrote the obituary, did he?
In the Times,
I see, I didn't know that. February 56. Well, that's given me a lot to go away with and think about. I do wish I'd been given more time to do it. The trouble, it's so maddening. I mean, I...